I fear this may turn out to be a tad anticlimactic.
Maybe not, Doc. We've got two choices. Go back to the redoubt and get the hell out. Or, Dean, we try to get to that island, see what it's like there. Maybe there's some life of some kind. Or maybe just a place we could rest up for some time.
They turned and walked back down the incline of the road to the base of the hill.
What do you think, Dad? Reckon we could get out to the island?
Not keen on making another jump so soon, son?
I can't say I'd be too happy about it.
That is a frank assessment with which I think many of us would agree. I certainly would much rather chance these waters than go back to the Matran so soon.
I figured you'd feel that way.
The companions hit the road base and rounded the circumference of the hill. They came to the thin strip of beach that petered out into nothing at the bend of the land. Ryan looked toward the island, judging not so much the distance or the terrain as the state of the water that lay between. For about half a mile or so, the water was quite calm. It also seemed to be calm as it neared the shore of the island. However, there was about a mile of rough sea between these two points, the white water suggesting a boiling current beneath the surface.
Do you think we can make it across that? Especially with no raft of any kind and nothing that I can see around here to build one.
That's a hard call, JB. I figure we're all strong enough to swim that far. The only problem is just how much of a bastard that current in the middle is going to be. And how deep is this damn channel anyway? Are there rocks under the current like the ones we've just seen, waiting to rip us to shreds if we get pushed onto them?
That's an awful lot of maybes, Ryan. I'll tell you something, though. We should go back to the redoubt and have a look around. There may just be something we can use there.
I doubt that. I can't remember ever seeing anything like a raft or boat in any redoubt we've ever been in.
But you weren't looking, were you?
I don't think I was.
Exactly, Ryan. The way I see it, there's a chance that whoever used that redoubt before Skydark might have had something, even if only for their off-duty hours.
Millie's got a point there.
You're right, Mildred. I hadn't thought of that.
The group turned and made its way back up the shale and gravel road that led to the sector. They moved freely and quickly, knowing that they were safe from attack, and with a sense of purpose engendered by the search for a craft of some kind to take them across the channel to the island. As they reached the crest of the hill and the small recess where the sector lay, Mildred paused to look over her shoulder and across to the island. For just a second, she felt a cold shiver run up and down her spine. She frowned, wondering why.
Oh, that's usually Christy's department.
Did you call me, Mildred?
No, Christy. Just thinking out loud.
Mildred turned back to walk through the now open sector and into the redoubt tunnel with Christy. They walked in silence, thinking their own thoughts. By the time Christy and Mildred had caught up with the rest of the companions, they were already in the elevator. The elevator doors closed, and they descended to the lower levels of the redoubt, where the living quarters of the long-gone inhabitants were. It was here they would begin their search. It was thorough and systematic. Grouping into pairs, Ryan and Christy, JB and Mildred, Dean and Doc, with Jack operating on his own, they searched the storage and dorm areas, looking for a boat, or at least for something that they might be able to use to construct a raft.
Found something!
Joining him, the companions found the albino teen in a storage room that contained a lot of sports equipment, as well as three inflatable rafts, two canoes, and some paddles. It was obvious from their design that they weren't of military origin, but had more than likely been used by long-gone soldiers for recreational trips out on the water during off-duty hours. Jack dragged the two canoes from under a mass of equipment and separated the rafts from a tennis net and two basketball nets.
What you reckon?
I reckon the canoes are a no-go. You can only get two of us in each, and there's no way we could keep any of the supplies balanced.
Yeah, on the other hand, those rafts there could probably take three or four apiece when they're inflated. As well as being able to use the supplies as ballast.
Only thing we have to do is find something to inflate them with.
If they were used here, then the odds are there's some gas canisters somewhere. Guess we just need to look.
Right.
Jack rooted around and located canisters of gas that had been used to inflate the rafts in pre-dark days. He dragged the canisters from beneath some boxes.
Hope that's enough.
Only one way to find out. Let's get these bastard things down to the channel and try to inflate them.
They carried the rafts and canisters to the strip of beach, not knowing if the containers held enough gas to inflate the rafts. If they didn't, the companions still had the two canoes, which they had left in the redoubt, and Dean wondered if it would be possible for them to travel in relays across to the island. As the canoes took two people, two would set off, then one would return to pick up another person. With two canoes and only seven companions, it would take a couple of journeys. But Ryan wasn't too thrilled with the idea of relays. However it was organized, one person on each canoe would have to make the trip twice. Looking out at the choppy sea where the whitewater currents ran, with who knew what lying beneath the surface, he thought it would be too much to ask of any of them to make the trip a second time in rapid succession.
What do we do if these rafts don't inflate?
We think of something else.
JB linked the canisters to the valves on the sides of each raft and released the tap that allowed the pressurized gas to pass into the raft. The yellow plastic gradually began to unfold and balloon out across the sand. The rafts began to take shape. Ryan and JB stood back to let the craft inflate. Jack, Christy, and Doc joined them.
It would appear that there may very well be enough of the mixture within to succeed.
Looks like. It'd be worse to see the rafts half inflate and then the gas run out. More of a disappointment.
Indeed.
But there was no such disappointment, as both rafts fully inflated. Ryan and JB moved forward to disconnect the canisters from the valves. JB had to wrestle with the aged valve, stiff from lack of use. The canister came away easily, but he could hear the gas escaping through the valve opening.
Dark night. Hope this doesn't all leak out while I try to seal it.
Hurriedly closing the valve, the armorer tested the raft's tubular sides. The plastic was still hard to the touch, almost like a solid block of wood.
Ah, shit.
Ryan was having similar trouble as he secured the valve on his raft. He also found the valve to be uncooperative, but thankfully, the gas had leaked so slowly the raft was still sturdy.
Okay, people, guess we're ready to go for this. JB, you take that raft with Jack, Doc, and Dean. I'll take this one with Christy and Mildred. We'll divide the baggage so that we get slightly more on this one.
Sounds about right.
JB cast an eye over the assembled companions before polishing his spectacles in readiness for the journey ahead. The division of personnel and supplies was based on the size and weight of the individuals concerned. With seven people and two rafts, one would have to take four and one three. The problem was how to divide the personnel so that the weight would be roughly equal in each craft. Given that Ryan would pilot one craft and JB the other, it made sense to put the three lighter people in with the armorer, since Ryan was stronger. Christy and Mildred were both muscular women, whereas Jack and Doc were fairly light for men. Dean was still a boy. This would leave the weight distribution a little uneven, with the armorer having the heavier boat, so the supplies were carefully portioned out to compensate. The two parties carried the assembled rafts to where the waves gently lapped at the shore.
JB, take it out some way before launching.
I figure this tide could be deceptive. Could push us back easier than we think. Go in up to the waist.
That'll make getting aboard real easy.
Okay, Mildred, you figure how we can get past the breakers and I'll go along with it.
Yeah, okay. I know we don't have a choice. I just felt like bitching.
The seawater was icy cold on their legs as they moved deeper into the tide. The current tugged at their sodden clothing, flooding their boots. The waves washed over them, trying to tug the raft into shore as they pushed out. JB was right. By the time the water reached their waists, they had passed the point where the gathering waves tried to take the raft back to shore. Now they could mount the crafts to begin the short journey in earnest. As the raft bobbed on the water, Ryan held it steady as Christy and Mildred climbed in. They found it hard to get purchase on the slippery plastic, which gave too easily beneath them, allowing seawater to pour into the shallow basin.
Whoa!
Christy lost her grip on the slippery plastic and found herself falling head first into the water. Christy stood in the frigid water, her soaking hair clinging limply to her neck. She looked a bit like a beautiful drowned rat.
What's so damn funny?
Nothing, lover.
I hope this island is worth it.
Whatever is.
Well, you get to paddle, laughing boy.
Sure thing.
Ryan took the oars and began to pull toward the island. Meanwhile, the other raft had proved to be less problematic for Dean and Jack, who were light enough to mount the raft without much trouble. But Doc had more of a problem, slipping in the water as he tried to thrust himself over the lip, nearly capsizing the raft. It was only JB's hand at his back, pushing him up, that stopped him from slipping back into the water. Doc settled himself and lay back to help balance the raft for JB's entry.
My apologies, John Barrymore. I fear that the sea is an environment in which I am not entirely at home.
Not the only one.
Jack barely suppressed a shiver as the icy cold water still chilled his bones. JB took the oars and began to row, with some distance to make up on Ryan. His muscles knotted as the sea gave hard resistance to his strokes, and he gritted his teeth with the effort.